Blog Talk Radio.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Keep Chopping Wood. This is your host, Zach Goodall. Today we're going to be recapping the Jaguars' loss to the Detroit Lions by a score of 26-19. And I mean, this just gets old telling you guys over and over again, like, what a pathetic loss, and overall just what a pathetic excuse for a showing by this team. Week in and week out, it's just always bad. But the Jaguars, yeah, they lost yesterday 26-19, and the defense came out and had one of its better games of the season. Matt Stafford didn't throw a single touchdown, and the only offensive touchdown was on an Eric Ebron, who's the Lions tight end, little end around at the 1 yard line where he scored. And that was, I mean, it was, I don't really know what to call that play because it's not something I'd really expect. I'd never expect a tight end to get an end around, but he scored and that's all they were held to. But all in all, the Lions were held to only 14 rushing yards. So it just kind of proves that the defense is good enough to where they can keep the Jags in games. And then the offense led by Blake Bortles just knows how to lose games for Jacksonville. So on that note, I'm going to go ahead and bring in BCC reporter Jimmy Seatman. And we're just going to recap the game, go into some fantasy football stuff. I mean, there's not enough really to talk about. I even reached out on Twitter and said, hey, if you guys want to, ask questions and stuff like that for us to answer on the podcast, you know, we'll answer a couple. So we'll go and get to it. Jimmy, how's it going?
There's definitely been better days, man. Definitely been better days. But, you know, it's just week in and week out. I think the most frustrating thing is I was talking to someone about this today. You know, I live up here in Maryland, a lot of people Redskins fans. And I just thought, like, if Kirk Cousins was the quarterback of the Jaguars, this team probably is 7-3. I mean, that's, you know,
like that.
I mean, it's just frustrating week in and week out.
Yeah. It shows how much a quarterback can really do to this team. And I know problems go beyond the quarterback with Gus Bradley and the coaching staff, and it's just a really horrible culture for football. But, I mean, yeah, Blake's a huge problem, and we just kind of repeat that over and over again. But, I mean, there's not much else to say besides the fact that he loses the team football games. But what are your thoughts on the defense? You know, I mean, they've had they held the Lions to 14 rushing yards, and Matt Stafford didn't throw a touchdown, and he, I think, had thrown 11 in the past three games or something. So, I mean, they're proving to really be what seems to be a real good defense and what seems to be a pass rusher away from, like, a good pass rusher away from being a really good, maybe great NFL defense. But, I mean, what are your thoughts on them as a whole?
I think there's a lot of criticisms that we can have Gus Bradley and the way he runs the team and how the culture is, I think he's actually done a pretty good job with the defense. I think, number one, they're usually pretty disciplined, at least this year. You don't see them getting out of their rushing lanes over a lot, which is why some games they do it a little bit, but a lot of the times they're pretty disciplined. They don't give up huge, huge plays, which was a big problem for this team, in the first couple of years of the Gus Bradley regime. The secondary obviously is much improved from where it started, and that'll start with Jalen Ramsey, who basically just takes away one side of the field. And I actually don't think Prince Amukamara is that bad. I just think when you have Ramsey on the other side, you kind of have to pick on somebody else. And so he gets that treatment. I mean, the linebackers this year have been playing out of their minds. Telvin Smith is someone who, when the offseason comes, like, he should get an extension right away. Paul Posluszny, while I'm not a huge fan of him, he actually struggled yesterday. Theo Riddick made him look silly a couple of times. I think he's played well. It's amazing, but he's done well. And this is the defensive line. I mean, I know Malik Jackson, like, people may not be, maybe a little disappointed because of the $85 million tag, but overall, except for maybe that San Diego game in the beginning of the year, he's played really well. And he's not going to be a guy who's going to get 12 sacks, but I think he creates a lot of pressures for other people. And then obviously, Unique Ngakoue, who had probably one of his best first halves yesterday. He's someone who you can definitely peg as someone who's finally a pass rusher of the future. I know people like to rag on Dante Fowler, but I don't want to give up on him quite yet. I know he has the shoulder injury. I'm not sure how big of a deal that is. But with pass rushers, I mean, there's just too many examples of guys, you know, coming on later in their career. So, I mean, this defense overall I think is really good. Obviously, the fact they can't create turnovers is their big Achilles heel. They also, while they're seventh overall in, like, actual just team defense, they're 24th on third down, so they have troubles getting off the field in important situations, and they have the ninth most penalty yardage too. So while they seem to play well for overall stretches, they kind of have that weakness when it comes to getting off the field and just committing stupid penalties. So, but, I mean, this is definitely a group that going forward you have key pieces where next year this defense can become even better. I mean, you'd hope so. But I think the defense has played really well, especially the last three or four games. Even though they haven't faced, you know, world beaters for offenses, I think the Lions were a good testament to show this defense is actually legitimately good.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And, I mean, I think yesterday was potentially Yannick's best game besides the Colts game. Besides, he had the one sack, but he created a lot of pressure and was great off the edge in the run game. And like I said, the Lions were held to 14 yards rushing. And, I mean, their lead rusher had 13 yards, and the second had six. So there was a play for negative 6 yards, but adding it all up with Ebron's one-yard touchdown, like, it was 14 yards. And it just seemed like the defensive line really took steps. And even Dante Fowler, and I know we've been calling him, like, personal Fowler Jr., like, it was his first game in as long as I can remember where he didn't commit a personal foul. And honestly, he seemed to create a lot of pressure, too, on inside stunts. And all in all, it just seemed to be, like, an improved game for him. And like you said with Jalen, he pretty much takes away half of the field. And honestly, yeah, I think this defense, like Alfie tweeted this morning, is it's one good pass rusher, a consistent pass rusher on the opposite side, whether Fowler becomes a standing linebacker or a rotational guy. But something like that to where this – defense can be scary good for a long time, and that's not something we've really been able to talk about since the Jack Del Rio days. But so then I would go a little bit into the offense, but I mean, what's there to say really? So I'll kind of skip over that and ask you, what do you think the biggest position of need is when we head into the off season, since it's November 21st and we're already talking about March and April?
So I think naturally you have to look at the positions where you're going to be losing starters via free agency. So left guard with Luke Jokel, I don't think they'd bring him back. Strong safety, Jonathan Cyprian, and the second corner spot with Prince Mukamara. I think right tackle is one too. Although before the show, I looked at the potential like right tackle market, and it's pretty weak. So I know Parnell has played pretty bad this year. It just kind of looks like he lacks effort. But it's kind of one of those things where be careful if you cut a guy before you know if you're going to get something better, because it is a pretty weak tackle free agency. But I'd have to say those. The cornerback market actually will be pretty flush, especially if the Jaguars are able to open up their pocketbooks a little bit. And the good thing is about having Jalen Ramsey on a rookie-scale contract is that you can put another really good guy across from him and for 3 or 4 years not have to worry about what Jalen Ramsey's contract is going to look like. You know, you don't see a lot of secondaries that have two really high-priced corners on each side. So having Ramsey on that rookie scale deal, especially with a fifth-year option because he was a first-round pick, I mean, that could prove to really benefit the Jags, and especially if they want to, you know, be able to have that shutdown defense, that would help. Pass rusher, you know, it's one of those things where in free agency, if they're going to get it this year, this offseason, I don't think it'll be a big, you know, big-time guy. You know, a guy like Chandler Jones is maybe somebody who comes to mind as a big-time guy. Maybe they just could look for more of a rotational person because, I'm not sure how much do they want to take snaps away from Yannick and Fowler. Now, look, in the draft right now, they're slotted for third. They end up getting the third pick, and the Browns take Kaiser, and the Bears take Watson, and you get Myles Garrett, you run to that podium as fast as ever. But I don't think, even though, you know, pass rusher is definitely still in need, I don't think it's something they're going to spend tons of money on in the off season. So I'd say left guard is one too. I mean, we've kind of seen the difference that you've got a guy like Kelechi Osemele has made in Oakland, where you just get that guy who's just a bruiser in the run game, and that's something the Jags really need, is someone who can really just be that tough kind of guy. We kind of thought AJ Cann was going to be that guy, and I still think he needs time, but he hasn't been that big bruiser. So, I don't know. There's a couple
he's been more – go ahead.
Oh, yeah, no, you can go. I was just going to say there's a couple
that
come to mind. But, yeah.
Yeah, it's just with AJ Cann, I mean, I think he's been a bit better of a pass protector, but he's not been helping in the run game as seen with when we run to the right, at least last time I saw the stat, it was like contact was made with the running back a yard or two behind the line of scrimmage. And that's just showing that, I mean, the pass protection is much better for this team than the run blocking, and it's improved under Hackett. But, I mean, I've been a little bit wrong on my Hackett takes. I don't think he's actually been as good as I was giving him credit for now that I've seen a couple games in. But when he's helped with the running a bit, but Cann's more of a he's more of a pass protector. So I could see even in April if they have a guy like Dan Feeney from Indiana who's there in the second round, you know, you take him and you put him on the right side and move Cann to the left where he can do better on the blind side protection and helping Beecham out over there because I think Beecham will get his option picked up. I think that can kind of solidify it, but at the same time, just we've got so much time until then, and for now we're stuck with Chris Reed, who's going to be starting at left guard since Omame was just put on the IR.
I mean, if anything, what they need is just more depth, and it's something why I think, like, every draft, you should probably, as a team, pick at least one offensive lineman and at least one defensive lineman because those are the positions that guys are going to get hurt at every single year. And you just need guys. You just need bodies sometimes and guys who are of quality. And even, like, backup kind of swingmen, offensive linemen just usually aren't even available in the free agency market. So, yeah. And then just the offensive line in general, I don't know if you said this. Like I said earlier, Telfon's a guy who, you know, January comes, I would extend right away. Brandon Linder is another guy, too. I was trying to look up similar contracts that centers, guards have gotten as extensions. So before they hit free agency and before they tested the open market. And we know that open market can inflate prices a lot. The most similar thing I could come up with was Jason Kelce for the Eagles, who signed a 6-year, $37 million deal. I actually think they could probably get Linder for less than that. And with the cap, you know, jumping up probably a projected $11 million from 55 to 166, if you can get Linder for a decent price tag and make sure he doesn't hit the free agency market and just assure yourself a guy moving forward as a cornerstone on the offensive line, I think that would be important. Because I think especially the last 4 or 5 games, as the run game's gotten better, Linder has really impressed me. And the thing is, he can't play guard and center. And he has impressed me how he's played center because I kind of – wondered a little bit how he transitioned to that, but I don't know what your thoughts on that are, though.
I think he's been impressive. I kind of doubted it too at the start because we knew what he was as a guard, and I mean, I know PFF for what it's worth. I mean, I know their offensive line judging and grading is probably their best. What they're best at, and I mean, they've got him ranked as a top 5 center, and I still think there's improvement there because you know it's his first season in the NFL at that position. He's also, you know, dealing with an absolute shit quarterback. And but I mean, I think there's room for improvement, and I think it'll come. But yeah, I think if they can get him for something just under what you said with Kelce's deal, I think that'd be really good for this team because I think he can be a building block for this offensive line. He's known to be a really good leader for the guys. So I don't know, but I think he and Telfon should be the first two to get extended.
And I would say A-Rob, I mean, as of last year, he would have been the most obvious guy. I still think he does at the end of the day, but I think it makes it a little bit harder just with the season that he's kind of had. While he's had some drops in the early in the year, I do still think a lot of his troubles have come from just Blake. Just being pretty, pretty terrible.
I mean,
so,
yeah, I talked about
he's
it.
He's one of those
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, I talked about it.
Like,
yeah, I brought it up on a podcast a little bit ago, and I mean, I think A-Rob had 71 yards after the catch after last week's game, and I mean, he had, I can't remember how many yards he had, but I know last year he had 318 at the end of the season, and it was already past the halfway point, so considering that he's only got 71 after the catch, and then same with Julius Thomas, he has 38 over the past 17 receptions before yesterday, like, it just goes to show you that the ball isn't being put where it needs to be.
Yeah, no, and he's one of those guys, again, like, when you get good players, and the Jaguars haven't had this because they just haven't, they did not draft well for the longest time, and they never really needed to re-sign their own guys, it's just important to get those guys under contract. And it helps because players value security, so, you know, a year away from their free agency, they are usually willing to take a little bit less, you know, and what you don't want to do is franchise someone, you know, get close to the deadline, like, kind of get into this battle with them on how much money they should have. You know, I mean, they have, you know, and for the Jaguars, it's important. Like, they can't afford to lose good players already, and they already know, you know, as a team, like, when somebody reaches free agency, you know, a lot of teams
they're not coming back.
And the Jaguars are the, yeah, you know, and exactly. And you need to give them a reason to stay. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, the other thing is with this offseason in general, so right now looking at over the cap, they have about projected $139 million on the books with a projected $166 million cap. This doesn't also include, like, they can roll over space from this year too, just like they did last year. And the fact that, you know, Dan Scuda, you know, no dead money, you can get $4.5 million off the books. Devon House, you can get $6.5 million off the books. Parnell, you can get $6 million off the books. Even Posluszny, you can get $5 million off. So they're going to have a lot of room just for free agency. And I don't know. I mean, but I think, again, Telvin, Linder, all the guys, I think you try to get done as best as you can. A-Rob is another guy. But, I mean, he may not want to do it either coming off a down year. He may want to try to get his stock back up. So but yeah, it's one of those things I think good franchises do. Good franchises get their guys to extend early.
Yeah, they do need to secure all the any good guys that they've got on the team. Otherwise, we're going to go back into, you know, the outlook from 2013 that this is going to be another bad rebuild. But so I wanted to get to some fantasy recap, and keep in mind that I'm not much of a fantasy guy, but we knew going into the year that Blake would be a good fantasy play, kind of regardless on how he looks on the field, because garbage time is money in fantasy football. But, I mean, him, A-Rob, Chris Ivory, and Julius Thomas, you know, do you know how have they been doing so far in terms of fantasy? I know, like I said, with Blake, and then Ivory's had a pretty disappointing season, minus, like, two games, but I think he had, like, 8 fantasy points in ESPN standard leagues this past week, and it seemed to, like, an average flex play. A-Rob's been up and down, but, I mean, what are you thinking? Like, how have they done?
I mean, A-Rob's one of those guys, and I have him on one of my teams, that you keep him in every week just because even though he's been up and down, he's more consistent than a lot of guys. Like, I have Marvin Jones, too, and, like, he has, like, disappeared half the games he's played. Like, literally gets 1 or 2 points in a standard league. Hearns, especially the last couple of weeks, like, I mean, I personally think Hearns is injured in some sort of way. I can't remember what they reported on that he was, like, playing with, like, nicked up, but I think it may be worse than that. One of those things we find after the season that, you know, maybe he was playing through a tear or whatever. I mean, the running backs, I mean, I from the beginning, from my fantasy league, stayed away from them just because, A, last year they had 3 rushing touchdowns, and rushing touchdowns are basically as important as it gets. And I didn't think even with an improved running game it was going to change that much. But also, I mean, in fantasy just in general, and I'm no expert, but you really want to get those bell cow type of guys or guys that also make differences in the passing game, like a Theo Riddick, for example, if we're looking at this week. Theo Riddick is a good guy that you can have, you know, that a lot of people probably picked up later in their fantasy drafts, but he's probably produced for them. I mean, even though he was injured, he's a guy who, if you can get a good receiving back, you know, the Danny Woodheads, Theo Riddicks, who don't go in the first few rounds, are always good. But Bortles, I mean, Bortles, I almost won one of my leagues last year, picking him up halfway through the year. I mean, that's how good he was in the second half, even if it wasn't garbage time. But, I mean, this is just not a team that, especially offensively, you want really anybody to be relying on, especially if you're going into your fantasy playoffs, besides maybe A-Rob. I mean, Julius Thomas at this point, besides maybe, you know,
why
that
is
first
he on
week
the field?
In Green Bay. Yeah. you know, let's talk about him real quick just for a second. So there are people, like, coming out, and I've talked to people saying, oh, they should just cut him after this year and things like that. He's one of those guys who I think if you bring in a new coaching staff and they know how to use him correctly instead of running these, like, freaking 2 yard little curl routes over the middle or 2 yard outs where they try to get him to get yards after the catch. But he's a guy who I feel like he part of it is his fault. He does look out of shape. He looks disinterested. But he's a guy I feel like you bring in, like, I don't know, Todd Haley or someone in, and you get him to commit to it and get in shape. He's a guy who's worth keeping around. I know people aren't happy with him at the moment, but, like, we don't, like, this. There's this whole thing, like, just cut everybody, get rid of everybody. I'm like, no, that, you know, good coaching staffs know how to use players better. Julius Thomas is a guy who, if next year, if they actually get a good coach, like, we could see more of Denver Julius Thomas than Jacksonville Julius Thomas.
Well, not just a coach that'll, like, you know, use him better, but, I mean, yeah, I think they need to bring in a new strength and conditioning coach because he's the furthest thing from conditioned at the moment.
Yeah, and just going back to the fantasy thing one more time, even their defense isn't playable because they don't get turnovers.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's all you have to kind of really say about that.
Then, yeah, yesterday they had the 2 turnovers when it looked like they were about to set an NFL record, which is something they're good at, setting bad NFL records in the turnover streak. It's just – it was about time that they got a turnover. I felt good for Telvin getting – forcing and recovering a fumble, especially, like, considering his circumstances. I felt like he kind of – you know, he was going to go out there and he was going to have a good game, and I don't know. It's just the kind of weird feely thing about me that I felt good for him.
Yeah, no, and he's somebody who, you know, while he did kind of call out the fans earlier this year, I guess some people had a problem with that. I mean, I didn't as much, but I mean, he's really an emotional guy. People in the locker room, you know, you get close to them, they talk about how Telvin is really the emotional leader. He's a guy who speaks up a lot of the time. You know, you can just tell he just gives it his all every single play. And I mean, he's just really, really good. So when you combine yourself being really, really good with just being a really good leader, I mean, even Puz, like, raves about him. And, I mean, I don't think Puz is, like, that great of a leader per se, but if someone who's been in the NFL for, you know, 10 years, you know, really has your respect from day one. And, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, Telvin is the guy who you want to set a culture to. And I know he kind of follows Gus Bradley a lot. Gus Bradley is kind of his guy. But Telvin is a guy, if a new coach comes in, you can point to that guy and be like, this guy is going to help me with this team and establish a culture. And so his value on the field is really important. But I think even off the field, like, that dude is just, like, that's the kind of guy you want in your locker room.
Yeah, I totally agree. So we'll get on to something real quick before we get to the questions, and I'll just make this quick. Jacksonville plays Buffalo next week. Then the weeks after, they've got Denver, they've got Minnesota, they've got Houston, they've got Tennessee, and they've got Indianapolis. And it's a 3-3 split, Denver, Minnesota, and Tennessee being at home, and then Buffalo, Houston, and Indianapolis being away. Are there any winnable games left on the schedule?
If I had to predict right now, I'd say they go 1-5, and they win one of those Houston, Indianapolis, Tennessee games. I don't think they go on the road and beat Buffalo. Like, Buffalo has games where they look kind of bad, but they're just also a better team, and their defense is really good too. So I mean, I don't know how this team would want points against them. Minnesota and Denver, I even though Minnesota went on a 4-game losing streak, they're still a significantly better team. I mean, I think they just win one of those AFC South games. I mean, I couldn't even tell you which one they win. Maybe they beat the Texans. I don't know. Maybe the Texans get such a big lead they rest people. I have no idea. But I'd say 1-5. I mean, and that's like thinking at best, you know, because it's at this point it's just hard. It's hard to, you know, it's hard to find those wins. So I'd say 1-5. I mean, I think I had to predict.
Yeah, I'm feeling the same way. My kind of bold thing on it is I think with the way Minnesota's been playing, like, Sam Bradford's back to Sam Bradford, and their offensive line is so putrid that I think this is kind of a game where the defense can get to them enough. And, I mean, it's got to be something where the offense pulls off a miracle, which I can't bank on. But, I mean, my false sense of confidence in this team that happens every Sunday morning before the game is kind of getting to me right now and saying that there's a chance that the offense pulls off something fluky, and I'm probably going to get pounded for that. But it's whatever. So we'll go ahead and get to the questions then. I've got a couple. First from Chris Medlin at Med11N. He said, why are mashed potatoes more overrated than the Jaguars' offseason takes?
Well, first of all, let's start this off by saying mashed potatoes are incredibly overrated. Really down on the Thanksgiving.
Jeez.
Really down on
the
Thanksgiving.
I'm going to put you
chart.
On mute. Yeah, I don't know why I invited you on here anymore, man. Mashed potatoes are great. I mean, are they my favorite?
Here's my thing, though. There's so many things I'd rather have at the Thanksgiving table. It's not that mashed potatoes are terrible. It's just, like, if you're, like, you know, it's like free agents. Like, yeah, sure, like, you know, you could sign, player X, but you'd rather have player A, B, C, D, whatever. I mean, the off-season takes, I mean, I still think that, like, this off-season, like, I think they still had a good one. For the most part, I mean, it's just what happens sometimes is a lot of times fan bases expect everything that went right the previous year is going to go right. And if we just fix the things that were bad, then all of a sudden we'll just be great. And that's just not how it works. And I think a lot of people expected the offense to just pick back up where it was. And that's what happens a lot of the time. But I mean, and we can probably discuss this on great length after the season's done and if Dave Caldwell's gone. But, I mean, I think this is probably close to his best offseason that he had. I mean, 2013 obviously was pretty awful, but I don't know. I mean, I understood the optimism at the time. I wasn't somebody who thought they were going to go 10-6, but, I mean, I looked at it and said 7-9, like, why not?
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. It's my expectations were 8-8, and, yeah, we kind of – yeah, that didn't end up happening. We already have 8 losses, and we're in week 11, now week 12. So Matt Hoffman at Jack's Matt, who's frequently on the podcast, he wrote an article today about the Jaguars having a losing culture, and people started really ripping into him on that, saying it wasn't true. They're trying to blame everything on Blake. But answer real quickly, do you think that they do have a losing culture? Does this go, you know, beyond the players and everything? Is this just something that's been kind of brought along by, you know, the coaching staff or the players that really stand for the coaching staff?
Yeah, and it just all steps, you know, gets to accountability. And I mean, it, you know, the reports being leaked that, you know, a lot of the newer free agents or rookies just don't buy into, you know, what the coaches are saying and believing. And I mean, they absolutely have a reason not to. It's because, I mean, we've talked about this at length, but when you preach just get better instead of, you know, we need to win games. Like, and if you think about, like, Gus Bradley right now, I mean, you're down the complete hot seat. And it just seems like the sense of urgency isn't really there. Like, you don't need someone who's going to yell at screaming somebody all day. Like, that doesn't exactly what you need. But you need people to hold you accountable. And they just don't really hold guys accountable for the most part. And when guys like Malik and Dante and Odrick have gotten personal foul penalties, Gus will try to yell at them, and they're just like, whatever. So, I mean, I do think there's a losing culture. And once you lose the respect of players in the locker room, it doesn't matter how long you've been there. I mean, that was kind of like with Malarkey. Like, people really just – the players really halfway through literally did not care anymore because of his style of coaching. So once you lose the coaching staff, once you lose the players in the locker room, you have to make a change, no matter how good schematically the guy is or whatever. I do. It's just it stems from the top to the bottom.
Yeah, I totally agree. And then I'll ask you the last question before we get out of here. Someone asked, and I mean, the answer to his question is yes, we can do this, but that doesn't mean we should, and I don't think we ever would. But Phil McCracken at B. Stumac on Twitter asked, can we get Romo?
Yeah, you could, but a lot of times, and I like to say this in sports, it's all about your win curve and your timetable. And Tony Romo, just at this stage of his career and where he is, maybe offering maybe 2 more really good years left, it just doesn't fit where the Jaguars are right now. I mean, the Jaguars need to figure out, you know, who their QB is going to be for the future and whether Bortles is that or not. Having just a guy like Romo come in, they're not good enough to warrant trading any type of valuable assets to get Romo. Like, if this were a team right now, let's say they were, like, you know, 6-4 or something, and, like, we're just winning despite Blake, maybe you could make the case that, oh, we're just a quarterback away. The problem, this team isn't a quarterback away, and so it just wouldn't make sense. Plus, with Romo, I mean, I understand the last time he played in 14, he had an MVP caliber season, but they just aren't on the right win curve for that, and they have a lot of other problems they need to figure out beforehand. And while I like Romo, and if Romo were the quarterback right now, they'd probably be doing really well if he was healthy. It just doesn't matter with their timeline whatsoever. And there's going to be more teams, you know, the Broncos, maybe even the Texans, just other teams who are more closer to winning that'll probably be more willing to get him anyways.
Yeah, but the only thing that with him is, like, he's one sack away from permanently, you know, becoming disabled from a broken back. And I just don't know. Yeah, like you said, with value, they aren't ready to, you know, send value to other teams for a 36, nearly 37-year-old quarterback who's a walking toothpick. He's really close to just snapping. So, but anyway, yeah, that'll do it for the questions, and we'll go ahead and wrap it up. So, Jimmy, if you want to go ahead and, you know, give everyone a little bit of info on you, tell them to follow you on Twitter and everything, go ahead and give us your spiel.
Yeah, I know. I write for BigCatCountry.com, and my Twitter handle is @J_Seatman. I know some people don't like underscores, but the other one was taken. You know, follow my work, follow me on Twitter. I hope you'll be writing more as I get done with these damn college finals and crap like that. So,
yeah.
Just a lonely Jaguars fan in Maryland. That's
basically what I am. We feel for you, man. We feel for you. Well, Jimmy, thank you for coming on today. Great talking to you, and I'll be sure we'll talk soon.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. You have a good day, man.
You too. And that'll do it for our episode of Keep Chopping Wood today. So thank you guys for listening in. Please be sure to rate and subscribe on iTunes. You can listen to us on SoundCloud as well as the Blog Talk Radio platform, however that works. You just go to look us up on Blog Talk Radio. But thank you for listening in. Please be sure to send your questions for this week's midweek preview episode with Bo Jackson and Hank Jones to the Keep Chopping Wood handle on Twitter @KeepChoppingWood, and go Jaguars.